You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today's the Friday edition. However, it will not be a long edition. Usually during the regular semester, I give a 2, sometimes 3, 4 hour show on Fridays because people are in the Richland Chronicle office preparing the paper. So I have some adult supervision, not that I need it, but there is adult supervision. So I can go as long as I want. And usually on Fridays, I go 2 hours, sometimes 3, and rarely 4. And you'll notice we don't have any interruptions for advertising, which gets really annoying. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and the advertising is getting, how should I say this, beyond annoying, to the point I turn it off. When you have a popular talk show, you have a lot of advertising, and the stations make money. I have nothing against making money, but there is a limit. And I noticed this on one station today. I was listening to some talk radio, and I think there must have been a foul-up because they were running ads for like 10 minutes. I was going, what is going on here? Where's the talk show? And I think this was the Michael Savage show. I don't really have time to listen to Michael Savage. Usually I catch a little bit when I'm driving to the college, and that's only when I'm running late, which I was today. I don't know if you could notice it, but I'm suffering from a sinus infection that I've been battling for the last week or two. It's been up and down. Sometimes I have good days, bad days. I thought I had it under control, but it really knocked me out to the point that I overslept. I had planned to arrive early to the college and do something this morning, and I didn't get here to around 2 o'clock. It must have been 3 o'clock. So I was really knocked out, and I think hopefully this infection is under control and it doesn't develop into something worse like a sore throat and a cold. So if I do sound a little different, that's the reason. I do have a sinus infection that I am battling, and hopefully it'll be eliminated in the next couple of days. Now, what I wanted to do, I really didn't finish everything that I wanted to say yesterday. It was really devoted to the reaction to the Donald Trump candidacy. And there's some breaking news, or so-called breaking news today, that apparently, and I'm getting a chuckle out of this, that Donald Trump has not totally, completely ruled out a third-party candidacy. This is giving the Republican establishment fits. So what? Why do I say so what? Now, I'm not a Republican or Democrat, but those fellas that are running the Republican Party are giving former Republicans as well as current Republicans fits as well. I don't believe the Republican Party today stands for anything. What it is a party of candidates. The Republican, again, what does the Republican Party brand stand for? I don't know. At one time, I believe it was fiscal responsibility. Well, that went out the window decades ago. But I kept on hoping, well, maybe they'll get religion. Maybe we'll get a president and a Congress that truly believes in fiscal responsibility, truly believes in balanced budgets, truly believes in limiting the size and the scope of government. Well, foolish me. And that's why I'm no longer Republican. Because the Republican Party, while not as bad as the Democratic Party, have swung further and further and further to the left. And you see it in the size of the federal government and the fact that under Republican presidents and control Congresses, the deficit went up, up, and up. And the same thing with the Democratic Party. This is a broken record. They lack credibility. That's why yesterday I was making the point that the brand, the Republican brand, is severely damaged goods. What is growing in size every day is the number of people that consider their political affiliation to be independent. In other words, they've had it with the Democratic Party, and they've had it up to here with the Republican Party. That does not mean that there are some excellent candidates running for president. I understand that. I would hope so. But they're not, the party itself and its leadership, for all, if you're expecting fundamental change out of the Republican Party, forget it. You see, and that is the trap that a lot of voters fall into, no matter what their party affiliation. They think if you elect a president, we're going to have fundamental change. Have we had fundamental change? No, we haven't. Government has gotten bigger and bigger. The deficits fluctuate. Everything fluctuates. Everything changes. But it's changing for the worse. And I'm not kidding. Within 20 years, we will be Greece. And a little update on that. It looks like Germany has blinked. There's been pressure brought by the European Union on Germany to give them another bailout. Fine. But let me tell you what's going to happen. They're going to get another bailout. They're negotiating it right now to the deadline. And it's roughly, approximately, will be in U.S. dollars in the neighborhood of $60 billion. What's going to happen in 3 years? Greece is going to default. This is just a Band-Aid, folks. Greece can't pay its debts. There's no way, no how, can it pay its debts. And the only way it could is if Greece had several decades of a booming economy. They're the basket case of Europe. Probably the two other countries that are worse are the Ukraine and Russia today because of declining oil prices. So something is going to develop over the weekend. There'll probably be some announcement at the very last minute. Germany again, as pressure was brought to bear by the nations. Remember, they're 19 nations. I believe they're 19 nations, might be 20, in the European Union. Now, why do you think everyone blinked? Who truly benefits from a depreciating euro? It's Germany. Any country that has large exports would like its currency to be devalued because that makes their prices cheaper. That's what China is doing. So they want Greece in it because with Greece in the European Union and in the eurozone, and that somewhat confuses people, but they want them in the eurozone. Because then the perception of other countries is the euro is worth less money because Greek is in that and causing problems. But ultimately, it might not be this government. It might be two or three governments from now. But at some point in time, Greece will default. Now, Germany was digging its heels in that it was not going to give what's called a haircut. In other words, decrease the amount, the nominal value of the debt that Greece owes. We're not going to do that. Who ultimately pays for that, for what's going on? It's the citizens of Europe and, to a limited extent, the citizens of the United States. And the United States was bringing pressure on the Europeans to bail out Greece. I'm not for bailouts at all. I'm not for subsidies, government subsidies of any kind, and I'm not for bailouts. It encourages bad behavior. If you want to encourage bad behavior, give subsidies and give bailouts. So ultimately, Greece will default. I thought it already had, and it has. It hasn't. If it didn't get this $60 billion, it couldn't make the payments, for example, to the International Monetary Fund, which is largely controlled by the United States. So the United States taxpayer would be on the hook to the extent that Greece defaulted on the IMF. International Monetary Fund, the IMF's loans to Greece. The major people on the hook are the European people. And that's why Merkel, the German prime minister, was digging in her heels. She needs to get elected. Her party needs to get elected. And the German people don't like bailing out Greece, even though if you take a economic perspective, the German economy benefits from export sales. The problem is it's every 2 to 3 years that there's another bailout. And now it's beyond the point, and everyone recognizes this, there's no way the Greek economy can support the debt that it has. And who are the losers? Banks are, to a limited extent. They were really on the hook. A lot of banks were on the hook, but what happened is they exchanged that debt, and it was bought out by the governments in Europe. But the European Central Bank, the IMF, and the various governments are the ones that will ultimately be hurt when Greece does default. Now, I don't want to, this show is not about that, and I didn't want to divert to that other than to give you a heads up that you will be hearing some news over the weekend. Most likely at the last minute, they've reached agreement. Are you on the seat of your pants? Now, the only reason I talk about this is this is the United States 20 years from now. Note, I didn't say the United States is Greece now. It isn't. We still have a certain amount of time and room for maneuver that Greece does not have. And the major reason for that is the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency for the world. In other words, other central banks hold some of their reserves in U.S. dollars. And that gives the United States a lot of leverage. Now, there's another negotiation. Actually, there are two sets of negotiations going on besides the Greek bailout one that's they're talking right now. And I think something will be worked out, mainly because the Greek people are the ones who will truly bear the cost of this bailout. And they're hurting right now because the stories you're hearing is the banks, if you have an account of over 100,000 euros, which is more than $100,000, it's probably, I don't know, $125,000, something like that. They're going to confiscate your deposits. That's the stories because the banks don't have any money. Remember that when you deposit money, what does the bank do? They loan it out. And when you have a crisis like this, there's no lender of last resort. And as a result, the banks don't have the cash. And you have people demanding their deposits. If you were smart, you took out all your money and you moved it abroad so neither the Greek government nor your money wasn't in a bank. They have runs on their banks. So what the Greek government did was limit the amount of money you could take out every day at an ATM. It's not a good way to do business. But enough about the Greek situation. What's more important to the United States citizens, by far, is the the long, long, long conversation that the United States has been having with Iran, together with the representatives from Russia, Germany, France, the United Kingdom. Am I leaving out a country? Maybe. Over Iran's, I call them bomb factories. That's truly what they're doing. They're trying to build nuclear bombs, to put on missiles, to wipe out Israel, threaten the neighborhood, namely the Middle East and even Europe. And that's what they're trying to do. In the infinite wisdom of President Barack Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry, we're negotiating with him. We keep negotiating with him. As I said yesterday, that was your first and biggest mistake. You do not negotiate with a regime that is the world's leading terrorist organization. You do not negotiate with a regime that has killed hundreds, thousands of U.S. citizens, primarily the men and women in our armed forces. Some of you might be scratching your head. What is he talking about? Well, Iran, or the more proper label, let's show some respect here, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Man, that's a hoot, isn't it? A republic? It's not a representative republic. It's really the Mullah Madness Republic, run by religious fanatics, the Shia. Remember, this regime is not popular in Iran. It's even less popular than Barack Obama, if you can believe that. The Iranians don't particularly care for Barack Obama. I understand their pain. I feel their pain. And the reason why they tried a green revolution in 2009 and silence was the answer from that talkative president. He threw the Iranian people under the bus. So the Iranians, they don't particularly care for Barack Obama. Like I said, I feel their pain, but they really don't like the regime. And the regime knows it. That's why, just like the National Socialist Workers' Party, the Nazis in Germany, they weren't really liked by the German people either. Now, initially they were. Well, I'm not trying to rewrite history here. But eventually even the German people caught on because it was a repressive regime. And that's what you have. It's a totalitarian regime. In other words, if you don't agree with them, they feel it in their right to torture you and kill you. And that's what they do. It's a single party run by religious fanatics, really fruitcakes, and some of them are fruits, if you get my drift. Even though they hang gays, you got to get caught at it. But that's the subject for another show. So the United States, for now, several years, has been talking to this terrorist regime. Why waste your time? As I say, talk is cheap. There's no real common interest here. Do you think the supreme leader in Iran is going to sign an agreement with the devil? And that's who we are. The United States is the devil, the great Satan. The United States, no, he's not going to sign a deal with the great Satan. Satan and the little Satan is Israel. Like I said yesterday, I think the Iranians have figured it out. They're trying to get relief from the sanctions, both the economic sanctions as well as the sanctions on selling military equipment to Iran. They're trying to get their hands on, ballpark figure, about $100 billion. Now, we've been paying them as we've been talking. That's why they keep stretching this out, stretching it out. Now, I need to say something. I don't trust President Obama or John Kerry. They're both liars, repeated liars, habitual liars. And I think what's motivating this, remember early in the Obama administration what happened? He won the Nobel Peace Prize. About everyone that I know and fell out of his seat. Are these people crazy on the committee? Apparently they were. There were people on the committee that were not happy with this. But supposedly this was to motivate the president to do something in terms of peace. In other words, I don't know how you would call it. And I think Obama was just a surprise. He was in office less than a year, and he gets the Nobel Peace Prize? I said, what has he done besides talk? You see, Ross Perot was right. I talked a little bit about the Ross Perot campaign yesterday. But Ross Perot, and I remember watching this on TV. That's when I had a TV. I don't have a TV now. But he said, you know, I finally figured out the people in Washington, D.C. So my ears picked up. I said, okay, Ross, what did you learn, Ross? And what did Mr. Perot say? They think you've solved the problem when you talk about it. He was absolutely right. They think you solved the problem by talking about it. Or getting agreement on it. No, you haven't. As I said yesterday, ideas are a dime a dozen. It's the execution, if you will, of a project, a program, a business, whatever. And does it deliver the goods? In other words, talk is cheap. And it is. People are looking for results. Whatever tangible results. When people pay you money, they expect to get a good and service. They expect to get what they're buying. That's why capitalism has been so successful, where we have transactions where both parties to the transaction actually benefit. That's how market economies work. Think about it. People pay a lot of money for an iPhone. I don't have an iPhone, won't buy one. I think it's way overpriced. But there are people that value or are willing to exchange good money to get an iPhone. And pay for the monthly cost of having it. Who benefits? Both parties benefit. Some would pay probably double the price of an iPhone because they think it's so terrific. Well, lucky you that you have the money and think this is terrific. I'm not putting anybody down that has an iPhone. You're always free to choose the goods and services you want. That's what is terrific about the capitalist system. Consumers have sovereignty. which means the most successful in a free market economy supply the mass market. And if you're successful doing that, you will be very, very, very rich. As I said yesterday, and I'm doing it today, I'm looking at actually three computer screens, two right in front of me, but all three are using, actually there's four, but one I never really look at, are using Microsoft Windows as their operating system. And that's true of millions and millions and millions of people, not only in the United States, but around the world. Together with Microsoft Office, as well as Microsoft's Visual Studio, which is primarily used by developers, those are the bread and butter products of the Microsoft Corporation. And since Bill Gates and Paul Allen founded that corporation, initially as a two-man company, today tens of thousands of employees, Bill Gates is the richest man in the world. And that's the advice that I would give to anyone. Find a product, a service, something that the masses need and want, more want. Because many times people do not know what they want until you give them something that, wow, I want this. And if you do a good job, and that means every day you got to make it better and better and better. If you do that, you will be very, very, very rich. You might not be as rich as Bill Gates, but you'll be wealthy. And that's the same that Donald Trump has done. But what you'll find, and I've dealt with a lot of small businesses, many don't make it. They have some good years, follow some bad years, and they get in trouble. Even the most successful firms, and I include Microsoft in this, it is very, very difficult for any company to consistently over many decades execute. They lose momentum. They lose their edge for many reasons and different reasons. There are very few, for example, take the Fortune 500 that were around 100 years ago. There are very few. The only name I can think of off the top of my head is General Electric. Now, yes, companies get merged. I understand that. So it's difficult to consistently, over a long period of time, provide customers, consumers, goods that they want. But the people that can do that are successful. Now, I'm getting a little astray, but I'm trying to make a point. President Obama, I think, is trying to cut a deal with the Islamic Republic of Iran. I choke when I have to say that, but that's technically what they want to be called. But I'm emphasizing that for a reason, and in a minute I'll connect the dots for you. I think he feels he has some obligation to deliver or justify the fact that he got the Nobel Peace Prize. I think John Kerry is in it because he wants one. Frankly, I think more and more that prize has been debased. You know, they give Nobel Prizes in economics. And initially, some of the greatest economists, because they were still living, you have to be alive to get it, won the award. But they, after about, 30, 40 years, they started to have a problem. You run out of people. There's always a list that you say, he deserves one, he deserves one, he deserves one. The one I really deeply resent is the fact that they split the prize, actually more than resent. They should have given each of them a prize. I'll go that far. When Hayek got his, it was split with Gunnar Myrdal. I think he deserved his own prize, as did Ludwig von Mises. But you see, there is a leftist, socialist, how should I put it, bias amongst these awards. And they do leave out some very important people. For example, who, off the top of your head, can you think of anyone that truly deserved the Nobel Peace Prize and didn't get it? I'll give you one. Gandhi didn't get it. You see, he wasn't, how should I say this? He wasn't white enough. He wasn't an Aryan. He was an Indian from India. Now remember, let's be fair, that was 60, 70 years ago. But that's one that even today they, deep down, that was the one that they missed because he got assassinated. Maybe if he lived another 20, 30 years, maybe eventually they would get around to him. But that is what goes on. I think one of the greatest economists, not the greatest, but one of the greatest, was Ludwig von Mises. He never got it. He should have gotten it. See, he was a Jew. Yeah, there's a certain socialist, let's say racist, religious bias of that Nobel Committee. It's not so, how should I say it, virtuous as it seems. So So there are a lot of leftists that really want that prize, and that includes John Kerry. He'll keep talking to the Iranians forever. Yakety yak, yakety yak. So the talks continue. But there's a problem. And like I was saying, Iran, I think, has caught on. They have radios and televisions, and they can listen to it. I think they've gotten the message that whoever wins the presidency, and right now I think it's still a 50-50 proposition, but if a Republican should win and become president, that whatever agreement, and I'll get to that in a minute, should the Iranians sign, is going to be thrown in the wastebasket. It's going to be declared null and void. And I think the Supreme Leader understands that. What's going through his mind, why should I sign anything? Because in 18 months or less, it's null and void. Oh, I'll play along. Maybe we can get as much as $100 billion in frozen assets back, and maybe we can get the arms embargo or sanctions lifted. So I'll play along, but I'm not going to sign anything. And ladies and gentlemen, without his signature, you can forget it. You see, the American people are a very patient people. Some would say a very slow people, but we eventually catch on. We eventually wake up. And what they're saying is, show us the signed and executed agreement, President Obama and Secretary Kerry. You've been talking now for years. We know it's complicated. You got to work out the details. But every time we seem to approach a milestone, a deadline, it's extended and extended and extended. And we're making progress. That's the current lie. We're making progress. I hope you're not making progress, because the details I'm hearing from the Iranians are quite different from what the U.S. representatives are saying. The Iranians are saying, we're not going to let anybody inspect anything on a military installation. Oh, well, how does that work then? And that's what they truly believe, and they're not going to agree to anything that allows United Nations inspectors. Then there's no deal. There's no basis for a deal, and that's my point. First, you should never have started negotiation, because if you truly did an analysis before you ever started this, there's really very little common ground. And what I mean by that, the Iranians are hell-bent on getting a nuclear weapon. They want to be the superpower of the Middle East. And that means they have nuclear weapons. And just so you know where I stand on this, I believe Iran already has several nuclear weapons. They're not going to announce it, unlike our president, who feels compelled to tell the world the details of our strategy, like when we're going to pull out. I mean, he's a hell of a negotiator, isn't he? Does it make much sense, Mr. President, to tell our enemies that you're going to leave in a certain date? Because what do our enemies do? Well, we can wait them out. We'll kill some Americans, soldiers. But we know they're going to be gone, and then we'll get back at all those people that helped the Americans. But that's our Supreme Leader, our Presidente, Barack Obama. He tells the world what our enemies want to know. You don't need spies. Just listen to them. It's been remarked by some of the people of other nations that the impression they're getting is the United States is negotiating for Iran. Now, when I heard that, I scratched my head. I said, well, what do they mean? They're making Iran's case to the other nations. I think if truth be known, if we ever get the truth, because these people lie, they'll look you in the face. And I'm talking Kerry, the president, and some other people, and lie to you. And that's why I say, if the truth be known. I'm hoping and praying that the Supreme Leader is going to do the right thing. He's not going to sign anything. And what does that mean? President Obama and our Secretary of State look like a pair of fools. And if the shoe fits, you must convict. And in this case, they are convicted by the jury, the American people, and public opinion. Every day that they've gone on talking and talking, Iran has not only got closer and closer to having the bomb, they have the bomb. Our leaders know it, but they're not talking. They can't disclose that. It's time for ultimatums. What I mean by that is very simple. You have a date certain, I'm talking Iran, to totally dismantle and destroy all of your nuclear weapon infrastructure. Every last centrifuge, every last building, every last research facility. You can do that with United Nations inspectors observing that, and do it in a timely manner yourself. However, if that is unacceptable, there's an or else here. And the or else is, we will take appropriate actions to make sure you never have a nuclear nuclear bomb, and if you have any, that they will be destroyed. That is what I call an ultimatum. That does mean war with Iran, but ladies and gentlemen, Iran has been at war with the United States for several decades now, since it became the Islamic Republic of Iran. It is the leading supporter of terrorism in the world, and one of its prime targets are U.S. citizens, U.S. soldiers, and U.S. property. That's why we have sanctions on them. But talk is cheap, and fools engage in talk. It's about time that Obama and Kerry walk like men and walk out of these negotiations with the world's leading terrorist nation, the Islamic Republic of Iran. The only question is when? The time for talk should end, and it should end today. There has been no signed, executed deal. I'm not even talking the details of it. And if you can't produce that, you have absolutely nothing. And I'm afraid, even if you had that, when the truth be known and people look at the details, they will gasp. In other words, the American people, our national security, has been sold out by two amateurs, and I'm talking the President of the United States and his Secretary of State, both of which have a long record of lying to the American people. Now, what I'd like to see, and I won't see with this president, is an ultimatum being given to the Iranians. Remember, he got that Nobel Peace Prize. And this is a man in search of a legacy, because right now his legacy is one of failure and disasters, both domestically and in foreign policy. Much of what he would claim as a legacy, such as Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, or more precise, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, isn't that a hoot? Talk to most Americans that have to pay for it that don't have subsidies. Ask them what they think of Obamacare. And that's the majority of the American people. They spit on it. They feel betrayed, even Democrats. I voted for him, and this is what I got. More expensive health insurance with prohibitively high deductibles. Or as Donald Trump said, you got to be hit by a tractor before you can collect. What he's trying to say is, you got to come up with several thousand dollars, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 or higher before they'll treat you. In other words, you have to have a very serious condition. And the problem is, many, many Americans simply cannot afford the premiums. And what makes it worse, even if they can, they can't afford the deductibles after they paid the premiums. And what's disgusting is the majority of the American people, I'm talking 85% of the people that had medical insurance, were happy with it. They were satisfied with it. There was nothing wrong with it. But what happened? We had a president that got together with a bunch of lawyers, bureaucrats, and the health insurance companies and designed insurance plans that the American people are rejecting. The government, when it intervenes, screws things up. They screwed up health care, or the health care insurance industry, actually both. So Obama knows that the clock is ticking, and Obamacare will be repealed, whether it's by the Republicans or somebody else. It is not popular. And again, I'm referring to Trump. Trump is absolutely right. In 2016, the full provisions of Obamacare kick in. And you're going to see dramatic increases in the premiums, and then Katie bar the door. The Democrats are going to pay for shoving down Obamacare down the throats of the American people. They're going to pay dearly. They've already paid. They've had massive losses in not only 2010, but also in 2014. And it's not just in Congress, it's in the states. The Democratic Party is a declining party. That's why they favor illegal immigration. They think they will renew their base. And that also is screwing the American worker. Even the blacks are starting to wake up. Now, I think it's a rather hopeless case, because they've been on the Democratic Party plantation for years, and they've been taken advantage of by the Democratic Party. I think the American people will truly know if the American people are going to do anything, if the blacks suddenly do wake up. Black employment has always been higher, significantly higher, than white unemployment. And Obama has not changed that. And so has teenage unemployment. Barack Obama has not changed that. We have a stagnating economy that in the next couple of years, if not this year, is going to go into recession. And what could have triggered it is what was happening in Greece. That's why a lot of pressure was brought to bear by the Federal Reserve upon the European Central Bank and the nations in Europe to put pressure on Germany to go ahead and agree to another bailout of Greece. Because what's the United States doing? The United States is doing the same thing Greece is doing, but on a much larger scale, which is to be expected because we have a much larger economy. But in less than 2 years, the national debt will be over $20 trillion. $20 trillion. That's 20,000 billion, where a billion is 1,000 million, and in unfunded liabilities for Social Security and Medicare that every day are getting worse, worse, and worse. Today are over 120 trillion. You see, demographics is driving what's happening in Europe and happening in the United States, and opening the doors to immigration is not the solution. What the solution is, clearly is free enterprise. It's staring you in the face. The problem is we have a government that's out of control. It gets bigger, and then they cut back. And it gets bigger, they ratchet it up. We need to fundamentally downsize the federal government. And really, it's also true with local governments. There are states that are in serious financial trouble. They're like Greece. California, Illinois come to mind. And Texas is not that terrific either, folks, despite what Governor Rick Perry would like to say. Debt has gone up in Texas. Rick Perry's going to run on his record, and go ahead, sir, because there's some people that know your record. But that's a subject for another show. What I want to focus in on, though, is what should be done in the foreign policy area. And there are two real concerns here. One is the Islamic State. Don't confuse it with Iran. The Islamic State are Sunnis. They're Salafists, which is the major divisions. I always have to review this because a lot of Americans simply don't know this, and a lot of them really don't care about it, unfortunately. What you need to understand is what is happening in the Middle East today. We have right now a religious sectarian war is going on in the Middle East. On one side, you have the Islamic State. They are Arabs. They speak Arabic, different dialects, some Syrian, some Iraqi, but they're Sunni. The two branches of Islam are Sunni and Shia. Those are the two major divisions. There are a lot of other subdivisions, and that's what I have to get into. But you have to understand that. We have a religious war going on. The Arabs do not like the Persians. Who are the Persians? The Persians are the Iranians. And the Iranians are Persians. They don't like the Arabs. This has been going on for centuries. So you have an ethnic divide here. You also have a religious divide. Namely, the Sunnis don't like the Shia, and the Shia don't like the Sunnis. So Iran is Shia, and they're Persian. The Islamic State, not to be confused with the Islamic Republic of Iran, is Sunni and Arab. They want to kill each other, and they have been killing each other for centuries. Now, do you want to send your son and daughter to referee this religious civil war? I say no, absolutely not. We have spent too much treasure and spent too much blood intervening in foreign nations, in particular in the Middle East. It's time to stop being policemen of the world. Time to stop. I know I was talking to a student here, and I made a point. I said, what is the national interest in the Middle East? Think about it. What is the national interest in the Middle East? It's not a hard question. It's not a trick question. And he's been in the Middle East. That's what's surprising. And he didn't have a ready answer. I said, it's oil. It's all he has been oil. I said, if there was no oil in Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, do you think the United States would be interested in talking to these people? Absolutely not. What do they have? A lot of sand. It's mostly desert. And until oil was found and natural gas, they were all poor people. Many of them were nomads, Bedouins. The only reason the United States has any interest in the Middle East is oil, and not necessarily for the United States. For Europe, as well as other countries such as India, for example. It might surprise you, but one of the biggest investors in Iraq is who? The Chinese. Why? They need oil. That's the national interest. That's why we're talking to Iran today. We're trying to plead with them, you know, if you get rid of your nuclear weapons and behave, good things could happen. We lift the sanctions. You could start selling your oil again. Not that they've stopped, but I'm trying to say that is the argument. Join the community of nations. Do you think this cuts anything with the leading terrorist organization? With the religious fanatics. They don't care about this. They're enders. They're waiting for the final days. They are truly religious fanatics, and you have them on both sides. So what's my grand strategy? Well, we all like to talk strategy. And President Obama is getting very sensitive on that because people are saying, you know, your strategy concerning the Islamic State, I call them IS. They like to call, the president like to call ISIL. I'm not going to get into that. They call themselves the Islamic State. If that's what they're calling themselves, they are the Islamic State. And ladies and gentlemen, they very much are religious. You better believe it. They'll point to chapter and verse to justify what they're doing, and they're beheading and killing and torturing people. And the victims are primarily other Muslims, primarily Shia, but also Sunnis. Remember that. So what we have today in the Middle East is a religious war, and people are being killed. Innocent people are being killed. Now, neither side considers them innocent people. The Shia are just as vicious as the Sunnis. They might want to kill you or torture you a little bit different, but ultimately you end up dead. Again, their attitude is, if you don't believe what we believe, we're going to have to kill you. That's why I don't think it's a good idea to go visit there. They've been wanting and to kill each other for centuries. And periodically, we get in these bloody religious civil wars, and that's exactly what we have in the Middle East. And I keep saying to myself, other than oil, and that is the reason. Why are we sending our American soldiers there? Because we've already found out the hard way that after about a year, they don't consider us as liberators. They consider us as occupiers, and then they try to kill us. And it's only natural. You know, the height of arrogance, and I'm tired of the neocons in the Republican Party. And I try to make a point. We don't know their language. We don't know their history. We don't know their culture. We don't know their religion. Would it be a good idea maybe to find out and get answers to all those questions before you recommending building democracies? And I hate that word because I don't want to build democracies. What we're really doing is building states. But it doesn't work out very well for the very reason I just pointed out. You can't ignore the history. You can't ignore the fact that you have fundamental religious differences between various ethnic groups, and you want to intervene. There's a lot of pressure right now for intervening, and you're hearing it in Congress. It's somewhat muted now because they know the president won't go along with it. He just wants to bomb them occasionally. You know, every week we'll drop a bomb here, there, and everywhere. That's not going to win a war. We know that. What do we need to do? I only have 3 minutes, so I got to cut to the chase. I've said on previous shows, and I think deep down this is what Obama wants to do. The only people who are going to solve this and contain and destroy the Islamic State are other Sunnis. So who are the military powers in that region? It's Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, primarily for the money. They have to destroy the Islamic State. It would be a fundamental error for the United States to send in American troops into that country again. That is exactly what the Islamic State wants. They're trying to provoke us to come back. Why? They want to kill Christians. They consider us crusaders, heretics. They want another match. That's why you see YouTube over YouTube after YouTube with parades when they go through the cities they've captured, as well as cutting off of heads or torturing or burning people alive or drowning them or putting explosives around their necks. They're trying to provoke a reaction by the United States. They want the United States troops to come back. They want to kill us again. Remember, who is the Islamic State? There are two primarily groups. One, it was Al-Qaeda in Iraq that we really had defeated, 2006, 7, and 8. Most of them were killed, imprisoned, or they escaped to Syria. The other group is former Ba'athists. Now, there are others involved, but in essence, That's who we're dealing with. So it's up to the Arabs, the Sunni Arabs, form a coalition and destroy, and I mean destroy, I mean kill. That's the only way you're going to stop this. The last thing you want is the United States involved in this. Now, how, you know, what's the economic incentive? Remember, from the Sunnis' point of view, especially the Saudis, that Wahhabis, and that's rather an extreme sect of Islam, and branching off from that, you have the Salafists, and that's a lot of the Islamic statists or that. Now, the royal family knows that the Islamic State wants to overthrow them. In other words, if the Islamic State should be successful, the Saudi royal family's time might be up. I'm not going to cry for them, because most of them will flee to Europe and live on their billions of dollars. They're relying on the United States. But we have to make clear to the Saudis, this is your fight. And you, Turkey, Egypt, Jordan, Arabs that are Sunnis, need to destroy, and I mean kill, the Islamic State and their fighters. We're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 50,000 at most, but they're the ones that are now succeeding, despite what Obama says. You're never going to win a war by just bombing them with conventional weapons. I need to make that proviso. Okay, the problem Obama is having is it's hard to get that coalition to do anything. Some of these states have money problems. Saudi doesn't have the money problem. They just don't have a large population, a large military, because they don't want a large military. They're afraid the military would overthrow the royal family, so they keep their military small. So you're going to need primarily Turkey and Egypt to provide the troops. Saudis can provide the money. What we can provide is the intelligence and, to a limited extent, training and air support. But that's what needs to be done. And the sooner the better, because the more successful the Islamic State is, you see, success on the battlefield for the Islamic State confirms their religious beliefs. The only thing that will stop and ultimately destroy the Islamic State is when the people fighting are dead, because they then have lost. In other words, their so-called religious views were not supported by the people. That's why they lost. They think they have the support of the people. When they don't have the support of people and lose by Sunnis of the same faith, Islam, they have lost. Now, that's problem number one. What's problem number two? And this is, frankly, a bigger threat to everybody, including the United States, and that's Iran. The United States and Israel together, and probably separately as well, have the military capability to wipe out, totally destroy, much if not all, of Iran's nuclear capability. That requires a number of things. One is so-called bunker busters. These are bombs, they're very expensive, they're very heavy, and they're laser guided, that can go deep into the Earth's surface, break through many floors of concrete, and then explode and destroy what's deep and buried in, for example, mountains or underground. You need those type of weapons. One that the United States has is what's called a massive ordnance. It looks like I have a misspelling on my title. Need to correct that. Massive Ordnance Penetrator, M-O-P, MOP. We have the ordnance. We have the aircraft. We have the intelligence. We need a leader that gives the Iranian government an ultimatum. Either you destroy completely under the watchful eye of the United Nations Atomic Energy Agency. I wanted to say commission. It's an agency. And you do it in a timely manner, which means we're starting now. Or we're going to bomb you. Bombs away. And we're not going to limit it just to nuclear facilities. We will first do what we normally do, is get air superiority by knocking out all your command and control systems, targeting your leadership, including the supreme leader and the mullahs. We will destroy your regime, and we will destroy your nuclear capability. And the Iranian people will rejoice, because they know that the Iranian people don't like the current regime. It won't involve very many, maybe a few, U.S. troops on the ground. Much of it will be done by our bombers, stealth bombers, as well as our B-52. We will have air superiority. We will take out their anti-aircraft, their missile defenses, their radars, their command and control communication networks, and we will take out every single nuclear facility that we are aware of. And we will do it with bunker busters, including nuclear bunker busters. Some of them are nuclear that can penetrate that deep and blow them up. And we will do it with the assistance of the Israeli Defense Forces. That's what I call an ultimatum. That gets people's attention real quick. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is war. But let's recognize the facts, the truth. The Iranians have been at war with us. Remember the hostages that were taken when Jimmy Carter was president? You notice when Reagan took office, suddenly the hostages were released. Now, why do you think that happened? They didn't like Jimmy Carter. That's true. But they were afraid that we finally had a president that walked like a man. They were afraid of the military consequences of a president that truly was a commander-in-chief and would take the necessary military actions to get our hostages back. I don't think it was a coincidence that the day or day after Ronald Reagan was sworn in as president, suddenly, after hundreds of days, the Iranian government releases the hostages. You see, the Iranians, I got to wrap it up. The Iranians, like most Muslims, they respect power. They don't respect weakness. And what they see in our president and secretary of state is weakness on parade. That is my grand strategy. Have the Sunnis take out the Islamic State. Israel and the United States will take out the nuclear bomb factories of Iran. With that, I have to wrap it up. Have a great weekend, and now America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.